The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. Turning down the turmoil, global equity markets appearing to stabilize in the face of stronger than expected U.S. inflation and new geopolitical unknowns out of the Middle East. Stock futures, they are trying to hold on to some gains. Call it a confidence crisis. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell repeating his message to the markets that the central bank will maintain its current level of restriction until it sees a significant shift in consumer prices. Shares of United Airlines, they're taking off with current quarter earnings estimates coming in far ahead of analyst estimates. Plus, the Boeing whistleblower heads to Capitol Hill today over his allegations of questionable manufacturing surrounding the 787 Dreamliner. And then later, taking a page from the Trump trade playbook, President Biden weighing ramping up tariffs on key Chinese imports. It is Wednesday, April the 17th, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We are coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's kick off this hour with a check of U.S. stock futures, as we always do. After a bit of a mixed session for stocks yesterday, that saw the Dow snap a six-session losing streak, while the S&P and the Nasdaq, they closed lower for a third straight day. Taking a look at futures, you can see they're in the green across the board. Looks like we're on pace for a rebound here in the U.S. Looks like the Dow would open up about 100 points higher here in the early trade. We're also looking at the bond market after the two-year note, the yield there, it briefly topped 5% yesterday. That's its highest level since April. You can see this morning it is just easing back just a bit, that yield right now at 4.95, but it's still at its highest level since November. Also looking at the 10-year right now at 4.64. All right, we're also looking at commodities, gold. That continues to shine. Coming off of its 20th record close to the year, looking at gold right now, just flat this morning, but as you can see, up 16% year-to-date. We're also watching Bitcoin holding just below the $65,000 mark as investors await an event that's called the halving, which occurs every 4 years and is designed to limit the supply of Bitcoin in the market. Taking a look at Bitcoin right now, basically at 63,400, up just about 1%. Remember, Bitcoin trades around the clock. Bitcoin up 49% on the year. And what's likely to be a big money mover this morning, we're talking shares of United Airlines taking off after issuing a current quarter earnings forecast that came in well ahead of analyst estimates, also slashing its expected aircraft deliveries for this year. That's due to Boeing's quality crisis. Taking a look at shares of United this morning, up almost 5% right here. So a big jump for that stock. We'll have much more on this and the transport sector as a whole. That's coming up just a bit later in the hour. But first, we want to see how Europe is shaping up as this trading day gets underway with Silvia Amaro live right here with me in our London newsroom. And Europe also seeing a bit of a rebound as well, Sylvia.
Absolutely. So at this stage, we have the major bourses in Europe trading in the green, and that is a different narrative from what we had seen yesterday when the Stoxx 600 actually ended the session down by about 1.5%. Now, there's a lot in the minds of investors. We know that. However, today the focus seems to be more on the fact that we are hearing from several corporates, but also on top of that, investors seem to be digesting some of the commentary from central bank policymakers. I would just highlight the FTSE 100 at this stage up by about almost 0.5%. This is after we heard the new CPI data out of the United Kingdom that basically showed an improvement in terms of CPI numbers. But I actually want to take you to one of the corporate stories that we are monitoring this morning, and that's ASML. The company kept its full-year outlook unchanged despite posting weaker-than-expected net sales in the first quarter and a worse-than-expected inflow of new bookings. And we have shares of ASML at this stage down by about 4.2 6%. Also, though, if you look, however, at their performance over the last year, shares are significantly higher, up by almost 45%. But nonetheless, this is also keeping with pushing some momentum also across the sector. So if we take a look at the other peers, you can see it's a bit of a mixed picture. We have ST Micro only in the green by about 0.4%. But as I mentioned, the news from ASML is putting some pressure in the chip makers. Let's see what else we hear from the company and how this could actually impact the broader sector, Frank.
Yeah, we'll continue to watch the broader sector and not only tech, but just how European stocks, they influence U.S. stocks. We heard a lot of people, including our Jim Cramer, say the open in Europe influences the futures in the U.S. market. We'll see if that correlation continues. Sylvia, thank you very much. All right, turning now to Washington and a news alert from the White House. The Biden administration is directing its trade office to consider tripling tariffs on imports of Chinese steel and aluminum from the current average of 7.5%, moving it up to 22.5%. The president also promising to work with the Mexican government to cut down on Chinese attempts to circumvent tariffs by importing metals to the U.S. through Mexico. The White House says President Biden will lay out these actions in a speech this afternoon. Right now, looking at steel prices, they're moving up just about 1%. All right, turning our attention now back over to Wall Street, with investors still digesting Fed Chairman Jay Powell's first public comments since last week's March inflation shocker. Powell's word of the day, it appears to be confidence.
We've said at the FOMC that we'll need greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2% before it would be appropriate to ease policy. The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence.
And joining me now is Ivory Johnson, founder of Delancey Wealth Management and a member of the CNBC Financial Advisor Council. Ivory, good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. Surprised at all to see futures moving higher after those comments from Jay Powell?
No, I think the market is starting to adjust to the fact that we have higher for longer. It's just going to take a second to recognize that the punch bowl has been taken away. Don't forget that, you know, when CPI came in lower in November, we noticed that the rate hike, the rate cut expectations went through the roof. We thought we were going to get 7 rate cuts this year. I think 3 before the July meeting. And what's since happened is we realized that's not going to come to fruition. In fact, we've actually had rate hikes. If you look at the 10-year Treasury, is at 4.9% back in November, ended up at 3.8% at the end of the year, but now it's back up to 4.67%. That's what the mortgage rates are based on. So not only are we not getting a rate cut, but we're actually got a rate hike. It's just going to take the market a second to understand this new reality before we get back to okay. Normal.
But don't you think the market already understands? I mean, we continue to hear people pare back their rate cut expectations. Morgan Stanley, just the most recent voice to say that they believe we're going to see one less rate cut. And if you also look at the 30-year, which is often seen as a read on inflation expectations, that's moved up since the last CPI. So the market seems to have accepted that inflation is going to be here for a longer time than we previously thought it was. Why are we seeing this rebound today when that's almost certainly going to push out those rate cuts?
Well, if the U.S. economy, if you listen to the IMF, it's growing at twice the rate of any other G7 economy. So that's positive. You've also got the wealth effect. So as the stock market goes up, you know, from last year, people are more likely to spend more money. And don't forget that we had negative income growth, negative net income growth, and negative earnings growth in both the S&P and the Russell 2000 every quarter last year. So our base effects are going to be, you know, easy obstacles.
You know, important note, the IMF also said there were challenges ahead, and one of them was the rising debt here in the U.S., something we talked about yesterday, U.S. debt increasing by $1 trillion every 100 days. But I do want to move on to what you're bullish about. Right now, it's commodities. You think right now is a good time to invest in gold, copper, other commodities? We've seen a big run-up in those commodities. Why do you think there's more room to run?
Well, again, it's just we've got a resurgence in growth. And, you know, like you mentioned, the market's telling us that we've got inflation. It's just factor exposure, right? If you notice that, you know, the risk to the market would be higher in inflation, then you should own that. And so I think that going forward, I'm not so much concerned about what's happening in the Middle East. I'm hoping we don't get a further escalation in the war, right. But I just think that the growth and look at PCI, look at PMI for global manufacturing, right? It collapsed in 2022. It was decidedly negative all year, but now it's up over 50. So global manufacturing PMI is actually starting to accelerate. That's showing you that we've got more growth globally.
So not worried that higher oil prices are going to weigh on industrial production. As you mentioned, PMI, we do have a report here in the U.S. We got to go, but not worried about those higher oil prices dampening some of that rise in industrial production?
No, it's not going to accelerate it. But again, if you're going to have higher oil prices, right, own it. If that's the risk to the market,
all right, there we
that's
go.
How you hedge it. You own inflation.
You did say now is the time to buy commodities. Ivory Johnson sticking with his guns. Good to all see right. you as always. You but much it. More Take on what's driving the markets and the train day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. Time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. And look who it is, Christina Partsinevelis at CNBC HQ with those. Christina, good morning.
Good to see you. Good morning, Frank. Let's talk about serious stuff. The Senate Permanent Committee on Investigations will question a Boeing quality engineer today after who earlier sounded the alarm over what he described as questionable manufacturing practices for the Boeing 787 Dreamliner jet. Speaking with NBC News' Tom Costello ahead of that testimony, the whistleblower says he raised concerns to superiors about a number of issues, including a gap between the parts of the fuselage.
Should Boeing ground the 787 right now to check the gap sizes?
I would say they need to.
The entire fleet worldwide?
The entire fleet worldwide, as far as I'm concerned right now, needs an attention. And the attention is you need to check your gaps, make sure that you don't have potential for premature failure.
Boeing has insisted that the 787 is safe and shows zero sign of fatigue, and that the planes have been stress tested and the fleet is safe. No Boeing officials expected to testify alongside the whistleblower, but the company earlier this week attempted to lay out in detail its manufacturing process in an effort to refute these allegations. Apple CEO Tim Cook, traveling in Jakarta today, says his company will look into building a manufacturing facility in Indonesia after meeting with that country's president. Apple currently has no manufacturing sites in Indonesia, but since 2018 has been setting up app developer academies. This is Cook's latest leg of his Southeast Asia tour after visiting Vietnam earlier this week. And video game maker Take-Two Interactive says it's planning to lay off roughly about 5% of its workforce, cancel games, and cut certain projects. The plan, which has been approved by Take-Two's board, is expected to save the company about $165 million a year and is also tasked with finding, quote, efficiencies across its business. Efficiencies, still the relevant word for many companies, Frank.
Right. You know what the other relevant word for this company is? Grand Theft Auto 6. That's really a phrase, so I think a lot of people waiting for that to come out. Are you a gamer? Do you play at all?
Oh, no. No, not at all. No. Tetris back in the day.
They also make
anymore.
2K.
Pardon me?
I love 2K. I'm a big 2K player.
Okay.
I said they also make 2K, yeah. Okay. NBA, NFL, but I digress.
Oh.
Christina, good to see you.
I'll
see you later
know.
On the show.
I didn't even know.
All right. A lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, U.S. lawmakers are reaching across the aisle in a bid to pass a bill to regulate a critical part of the cryptocurrency market. We have a live report from D.C. coming up next. Plus, geopolitical and economic uncertainty weighing on the global luxury market and LVMH. Then later, the meme stock that needs no news to log a 10% one-day gain, and possibly even more today. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. U.S. lawmakers are reaching across the aisle in a bid to pass a bill to regulate a critical part of the crypto market. Stable coins, which have been anything but stable over the past few years. Emily Wilkins joins us now from Washington with much more on these latest efforts. Emily, good morning from London. This time, the efforts in the Senate.
Absolutely, Frank. A bipartisan Senate duo is out today with a plan to provide this new regulatory framework for stablecoins. Republican Cynthia Loomis and Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand are debuting legislation that would basically create a framework for stablecoin that widely mirrors the current banking system. So the proposal would include a couple things, including having federal and state regulatory regimes, as well as oversight by the Federal Reserve. It also ties stablecoins to the U.S. dollar, key feature there, and ensures they are fully backed by reserve assets and would likely ban stablecoins designed to take their value through algorithm mechanisms. The proposal to prevent another FTX for users and provides a way for those who hold stablecoin to get their money back in case the issuer fails. Now, Loomis said the legislation is important to make sure the U.S. doesn't fall behind on digital security. She said that in order to meet the growing demand for our ever-evolving financial industry, we need to craft legislation that strikes the careful balance of establishing a clear and workable framework for stablecoins while protecting consumers. Now, this bill isn't exactly the same as a House stablecoin bill that cleared a key committee last year. However, lawmakers hope that the two bills could be reconciled if, of course, they are both able to pass their respective chambers. But while passage or even time for a vote just isn't a given at this point, the dual bills really represent a step forward in lawmakers making regulatory process on stablecoins. And this comes, of course, as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell have called on Congress to regulate stablecoins. Plus, the bill received a lot of technical assistance from the Treasury, the White House, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, among others. And Frank, at this point, the lawmakers feel they have a very solid product going forward.
All right, so Emily, a few questions here. Obviously, a lot more investors involved with crypto now with those ETFs. What are the odds of this passing, and why so much attention on stablecoins and the apparent ban on those algorithmic stablecoins?
I mean, as far as passage, it's always a big question in the Senate, where obviously there are so many other competing priorities, things to get done. But you did hear Banking Chairman Sherrod Brown told Bloomberg yesterday that he would be open to having a stablecoin bill pass through the Banking Committee and taking that up. Now, he didn't endorse this bill specifically, but at least there is a show of interest in that. And we know that this is something, is particularly in the House, where there's also been some interest in trying to get that bill done. But, you know, Frank, even if those bills don't wind up crossing the finish line this Congress, you can always reintroduce them next Congress, continue to educate members. And I think particularly as we are seeing parts of the crypto market heat up, that is something that lawmakers could be interested in doing. And, you know, a lot of lawmakers, I think, when it comes to the wild world of crypto, they feel a little more secure with stablecoin, just that it's pegged to the U.S. dollar and pegged to currency. And I think that's why you are seeing the focus right now on stablecoin and trying to get something on that regulation across the finish line, maybe before you go ahead and tackle crypto.
All right. Emily Wilkins, live in DC. Emily, always good to see you. Thank you. All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the sector that just can't seem to catch a break. We're going to dig into transports and what, if anything, can break it out of its 2024 funk. We are back right after this break.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for one of your big money movers, LVMH. Sales growth at the world's biggest luxury goods maker slowing in the first quarter as wealthy shoppers reined in spending on Louis Vuitton handbags and Hennessy cognac. But you can see shares are up 4%. Still, going into the numbers, revenue had slipped by 2%, missing analyst estimates. Sales fell 6% in China, excluding Japan. However, Europe and the U.S., those sales rose 2%. The company says the geopolitical and economic environment, it just remains uncertain. Joining me now to discuss LVMH in the luxury sector, Javier Gonzalez-Lastra, investment partner and portfolio manager at Tima ETFs. He runs the firm's luxury ETF, which has LVMH as a top holding. Good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. We're kind of citing some of the sales declines and missing the estimates here, but the stock is still up 4%. What do you think investors are seeing in this report?
Hi, good morning, Frank. Thanks for having me. I think they're seeing relief. I think there was a lot of fear that the print could have been a lot worse, especially since throughout Q1, we've seen some weakening of data, especially in Asia. And also we had the Kering profit warning. So numbers coming in just a touch below what were sell side expectations or consensus, I think gives a sense of relief.
Right. You know, you're setting the Kering profit warning for our U.S. audience. That's the company that makes the Gucci brand. I want to talk to you a little bit more about this report. When you look deeper into it, one of the biggest weak spots were wine and spirits. Do you think we're starting to see a bit of a divergence when it comes to soft luxury, wine and spirits, and hard luxury, things like handbags and watches?
Yes, the cognac division, which is a big profit contributor within that division, has suffered from a very big destocking, especially in the United States, where we saw big increases in stocks by distributors through the pandemic. I think we've already been through around 12 months of quite significant destocking there. So that's a very specific situation that we're seeing there in the spirits industry compared to handbags and luxury, which are seeing a slowdown themselves. But I think they're not suffering from the same level of destocking that we've seen in spirits and wine division.
One of the bright spots in this LVMH report was travel retail. Consumers from China spending in Europe and also in the United States, of course. For the broader luxury sectors, that can continue to power sales growth in the case where companies are seeing sales growth?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we continue to see travel, international travel increase. We're not back to the pre-COVID 2019 levels yet. And especially we're not back anywhere close to where it used to be, that level of international travel by Chinese travelers. So we do expect that will continue to improve going forward.
So we had a guest here in Europe on our show, Street Signs, that said, right now, investors are viewing the luxury segment like this. It's either absolute luxury or nothing. In your mind, are you hearing that? Are you seeing it the same way? And does that explain some of the performance we're seeing from companies like Ferrari and Hermes, companies that are seen as even at the highest level of the luxury segment?
Yeah, I sympathize with that comment. I mean, when you go into recessionary periods or more difficult economic periods for consumers, you tend to have a more resilient performance of the really ultra high net worth individuals that tend to shop these products, right, compared to the most more aspirational consumer. So I would identify with those comments. What I would say, though, is the sector is currently going through a slowdown, clearly. 2024 is going to be, especially the first half, a difficult period. Because of the high comparative base. I think investors in the space are trying to discern whether the 2024 will be a soft landing rather than a hard landing. Obviously, today's LVMH or last evening's results speak in favor of the narrative of the soft landing, which in itself helps gain confidence that we might be at the bottom, close to the bottom in terms of the earnings downgrade side.
Okay. Javier, it sounds like you're saying that cognac and handbags are an economic indicator. It is great to see you. LVMH shares up more than 4%. Thank you very much. All right, as we head to break, we are watching German-listed shares of Adidas. They're popping this morning. After unexpectedly raising their 2024 profit outlook, the company now expects full-year operating profit to hit just about $744 million, up from a previous forecast of $530 million. We are back right after this break. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's pick up the half an hour with a check of futures on the back of a mixed session for the markets. The Dow snapping its six-session slide. However, the S&P and the NASDAQ, their skid extending to three. Taking a look at futures, green across the board, as you can see. Looks like the Dow would open up almost 125 points higher. The S&P up just about a quarter of a percent. All right, turning back to one of the big moments of yesterday, Fed Chairman Jay Powell speaking, saying there's just been a lack of progress this year when it comes to inflation, really stressing the central bank is okay with keeping its policy as it is, at least for now.
If higher inflation does persist, we can maintain the current level of restriction for as long as needed. At the same time, we have significant space to ease should the labor market unexpectedly weaken.
And on the back of those comments, we want to take a look at the bond market. Keep in mind, the two-year note, it very briefly surpassed 5% yesterday, its highest level since April. Taking a look at the benchmark right now at 4.64. It's moved up about 20 basis points since that hotter than expected CPI read just a few days ago. We're going to continue to watch yields and talk about them in our market discussions. We're also looking at oil this morning as ongoing tensions in the Middle East add more questions around demand. Taking a look at crude, pulling back a bit this morning. You can see WTI, the U.S. benchmark, down over a half a percent, trading just about at $84.85 a barrel. Brent crude, the international benchmark, pulling back from $90 a barrel right now, also down just about a half a percent. We're also looking at Bitcoin this morning, holding just below $65,000 as investors. They await an event called the halving that occurs every 4 years. It's designed to limit the oversupply of Bitcoin in the market. Taking a look at Bitcoin, you can see right now it's trading at about $63,530, up about 1%. Remember, cryptocurrency trades around the clock. And year to date, you can see Bitcoin up over 49%. All right. A big part of the market's recent downturn, that's the Dow Transports, currently below their 50-day and 200-day moving averages and 15% off their record high. Dragging down the sector this morning, that's J.B. Hunt, after it reported lower profit and revenue from weaker demand. The company says the declines came from lower volumes and yield pressure, along with increased costs for equipment. So a number of issues there, including insurance claims as well. So far this year, J.B. Hunt has really been an underperformer. It's been underperforming both the Dow Transports as well as other transportation companies like a CSX, which reports after the close today. Joining me now to discuss this and much more is Ken Hoexter, senior transportation analyst at Bank of America Securities. Ken, good morning from London. It's really good to see you. I'm going to jump right into it. A lot of people consider J.B. Hunt as possibly a bellwether of consumer demand. Their big business is container shipping. That's how most consumer products come into the country and get shipped around. That came in 8% below estimates. Do you agree with that idea that this is a read on consumer spending and consumer demand?
Great. Good morning, Frank. Thanks for having me. I think J.B. Hunt, which moves most of its products, as you mentioned, in boxes, but domestic containers. So really is a good read on the domestic economy, as you talk about. Intermodal, really the key here was volumes were flat, pricing was down. This is just part of what we've been talking about this elongated freight recession that we've been in probably about 17, 18 months now. You and I have talked about this before in our truck shipper survey that we do every 2 weeks. Just demand has remained at or below freight recession levels now, like I said, going back all the way to February of last year. So just the demand remains weak and we're not seeing it break out. And that's exemplified what's going on with spot pricing in the market, where pricing is remaining really historically low levels. So I agree with you. It's certainly sending the picture, but first quarter, we expected to be weak, and it certainly was even weaker than expected, just given those results.
Yeah, I kind of think we're seeing that in the stock price. J.B. Hunt shares down more than 6%. So you mentioned some of the weakness in spot pricing and some of the weakness in the trucking market overall. That means prices are going down. Is that a read into what we expect from CSX, a large East Coast rail? Because when truck prices are lower, it gives a lot of competition to rail companies.
Yeah, certainly. It's a great example. So trucking moves about 70% of all freight tonnage in the U.S., represents about 80% of all dollars spent in the U.S., on transportation. So certainly whatever's going on in the trucking market does spill into other markets. However, the rails, for the second quarter in a row now, after having led in some of the early cyclicals in seeing some negative freight volumes, are actually posting their second consecutive quarter of positive volumes year over year. So a little bit different than what we're seeing in the rails, certainly, in the trucks, a little bit different than what J.B. Hunt saw at Intermodal, where volumes were flat. But here, the rails volumes are slightly up. For CSX, that should be a good start. But again, you're right. The pricing is going to be a constraint on them, particularly for export coal, which is a different subset of the market. But export coal is really seeing some weaker global pricing that could impact their overall pricing.
Yeah, you know, that rise of coal demand, especially for export, has been something that's been a big boost for CSX, specifically because it works on the East Coast. I want to talk to you about the transports overall. So since that CPI report that came in hotter than expected, transports down about 4.5%. We often see them as a read on the overall economy. The fact that we're not getting rate cuts as soon as many people expected, there were some expectations in June. What does that mean for the transports in the second half of the year?
Yeah, it's certainly sending the signal that you need to be more cautious, right? We've talked about, as I mentioned before, this elongated freight recession. We're certainly, shippers are struggling to see an outlook that is improving at a great extent. We've been talking about it hitting this 54 level, which is the average of the last three freight recessions we saw in 2012, 2015, 2019. It's struggling to break out. And so if shippers aren't seeing a brighter outlook, which is constraining that demand. As you mentioned, right. Transports being early cyclical, it's going to constrain their ability to really break out until we see that demand level start to take off.
You know, we got to hit on one part of the transports. We don't generally lump into the transports, the airlines, United Airlines out with a forecast that's really got investors pretty excited. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I beg to plead the fifth there. My counterpart follows the airlines, so I'll leave it to him to espouse on okay. The airline volumes. But I think what you're seeing, again, just is the outlook for demand from shippers on the freight side remains fairly weak. And I think that's really what's controlling what your outlook overall on the transports kind of is trending toward.
Yeah. All right. We don't want to take you out your wheelhouse, but I think investors are speaking about it. United Airlines shares up just about 5.5%. Ken, it is always great to see you. Thank you very much for your time and for your insight.
Thanks for having me.
All right. For more on the transports, including the airlines, don't miss a CNBC exclusive interview with United Airlines CEO Scott Kirby. That's at 8 a.m. Eastern time right here on CNBC. All right. Time now for a look at your morning's big money movers. And Christina Partsenevelis is back at CNBC HQ with those. Christina, good morning.
Hi,
again.
Hi, Frank. Good morning again. Autodesk lower after delaying its annual earnings report. Once again, the company is still dealing with an internal financial investigation, which it doesn't expect to impact any previous earnings reports. Shares are down about 8% this year, underperforming the broader tech sector. A better picture for AMC, up again after having its best day since February yesterday and snapping a four-day losing streak. While the move was not tied to any particular news, short interest around AMC was up, 16%. That stock hitting a number of record lows this year, now down more than 90% from its all-time high. I'd like to point out, though, the market cap is just a little bit over $500 million. And Trump Media also trying to reclaim some of its losses this morning after falling another 14% yesterday. The decline comes despite Truth Social's newly announced plans for a live TV streaming network. Shares are now down more than 50% since starting just IPOing last month. Frank?
All right, Christina, thank you very much. We want to turn your attention to a news alert right now. We have reports of a magnitude 5.1 earthquake hitting very close to Taiwan. This latest quake coming after that 7.4 magnitude one hit the island earlier this month, its largest in 25 years. That quake temporarily pausing chip making at factories in Taiwan. That includes TSMC. We're getting reports right now of a 5.1 magnitude earthquake hitting very close to Taiwan. And it follows a quake earlier this month, its largest in 25 years, the one that came earlier this month. We'll continue to watch this story and see if there's any other developments. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, using tech to target wealthy taxpayers. Now, Robert Frank lays out how some states are leaning on artificial intelligence to help replenish revenue shortfalls. But first, some of your top trending stories, and it's not just your taxes, of course, AI. It can also help you pick out your music. Amazon Music is now offering a generative AI-powered playlist that's kind of similar to Spotify's. Users can enter a prompt like crying and eating. Who? Crying and eating, wow. And receive a list of songs to match. That's an interesting idea there. A slam dunk for the WNBA draft, bringing in 2.5 million viewers. That is a 300% increase compared to last year. The previous all-time viewership record, that was back in 2004. That was Diana Taurasi's draft year. She was such a star. Wow. And fresh off earnings, J.P. Morgan taking the crown as the best company to work for in the U.S. That's according to a new list from LinkedIn, which takes gender diversity, upskilling opportunities, and the frequency of promotions into consideration. Amazon, Wells Fargo, Deloitte, and PwC, they all round out the top five. Worldwide Exchange, we're coming back, right after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Mizuho initiating coverage of Royal Caribbean, giving it a buy rating and a $164 price target. Mizuho says the cruise operator's unique mix of quality ship assets and different destinations should drive upside potential to estimates. Jefferies downgrading its rating on Urban Outfitters to underperform and cutting its price target to $32 a share. It says all three of Urban's brands, they've seen a notable decline in rolling three-month foot traffic, and that the turnaround at Urban, it also appears to be vulnerable. Barclays cutting its price target on Tesla from $225 down to $180 a share. It says Tesla is facing deeply challenged near-term fundamentals with expectations for a Q1 miss on soft margins. All right, turn our attention to artificial intelligence and the continued integration of the red-hot tech. A number of states, they are increasingly look to tap into its potential, especially when it comes to going after wealthy tax evaders. Our Robert Frank joins us now with much more on just how they're planning to do that. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Good to see you. Well, tax day may be over, but audits for high earners are rising fast, and one reason is artificial intelligence. High tax states like New York and California have been sending out hundreds of thousands of audit letters to those top earners. New York reported 771,000 audits in 2022. That's the latest year available. That is up 56% from the previous year. Accountants and tax lawyers tell me that audits have increased dramatically just over the past 6 months. States have had to cut their audit staff for budget reasons, but they are doing more audits through AI. AI programmers are helping them find patterns with high earners who may be underpaying or even underreporting income. The big focus is high earners who moved to other states during COVID. Tax authorities are challenging many of those moves, saying those moves weren't permanent and those folks still owe their state taxes. Another target is remote workers. So New York is going after workers who technically report to a New York office or New York headquarters, but they live and work entirely in a different state. California's deficit is now $38 billion. New York's deficit expected to hit $10 billion next year. So, Frank, they need the money. And just like Willie Sutton, they're going after those who have the money, and that is those high-income taxpayers.
All right, so Robert, you're mostly focused in this story on states. What about the federal level? Are we expecting to see more audits from the IRS as well?
Absolutely. So you've got it coming on the state side, and you're also going to see a massive increase on the federal side, because remember, the IRS has that $80 billion in new funding from Congress. A lot of that money is going toward enforcement, and most of that enforcement is going to those who earn $400,000 or more. So those audit rates for those high earners could nearly double in the coming years as the IRS hires more staff and increases enforcement. So if you're a top earner between living in a high tax state where those states are coming after you and the IRS, your chances of being audited in the next year or two increase dramatically.
All right, our Robert Frank. Robert, great to see you. Thank you very much. All right, turning now to our global briefing, we start with Morgan Stanley reportedly cutting at least 50 investment banking jobs in Asia in response to the ongoing slump in China. That will mark its biggest round of layoffs in years after delaying them late last year. The bank says revenue from Asia fell by 12% during the first quarter, contrasting strength from other countries. BYD out with three new premium cars as it tries to get into the luxury market. While BYD didn't provide prices or launch dates, it does plan to showcase the models at the Beijing Auto Show next week. The EV maker says the lineup features a plug-in hybrid system with better fuel economy and high horsepower. And UK inflation falling slightly to 3.2% in March, narrowly missing estimates. Lower food prices helped bring down the headline number, but that was offset by higher prices at the pump. Investors pushing out their Bank of England rate cut expectations in response, forecasting the first one to come in September or November. Interesting enough, we had a guest here in Europe that said he believes they're going to do a cut at their next meeting. Kind of shocked us all here. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus where our next guest says the soft landing scenario for the Fed and the U.S. economy, they may no longer be on the table. And join the first ever CNBC Changemakers event in New York City tomorrow, April 18th. Secretary Gina Raimondo, actress Drew Barrymore, and many others, they're going to share how they're reshaping business and redefining leadership. To learn much more, scan the QR code on your screen or visit cnbcevents.com/changemakers. We're back in just a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. The Biden administration is directing its trade office to consider tripling tariffs on imports of Chinese steel and aluminum. The president also promising to work with the Mexican government to cut down on Chinese attempts to circumvent tariffs by importing metals to the U.S. through Mexico. A Boeing whistleblower will testify before a Senate committee today after alleging the company's 787 Dreamliner is unsafe to fly. In an interview with NBC News, the whistleblower doubling down on his claim, saying the plane could fall apart and drop to the ground mid-flight unless those issues are addressed. Apple CEO Tim Cook traveling to Jakarta today says his company will look into building a manufacturing facility in Indonesia after meeting with that country's president. Apple currently has no manufacturing sites in Indonesia, but since 2018 has been setting up app developer academies. Take-Two Interactive is cutting 5% of its employees and canceling a number of gains to save $165 million a year. The video game maker says it's looking for efficiencies across the business and is trying to boost profit margins. The SEC is blocking third-party messaging apps from employee work phones to improve record-keeping and prevent security breaches. One of the SEC's social media accounts, it was hacked earlier this year. It also has to pay $3 billion after failing to keep adequate records of work-related discussions on mobile devices. And shares of ASML, they're falling on a 22% drop in sales. The chipmaker says it sees 2024 as a transition year with continued investments in capacity ramp and technology. Those shares, you can see, down more than 4%. Here's what to watch today. We get several key earnings reports from Travelers, CSX, and Las Vegas Sands. Also, a pair of Fed speeches later today with Cleveland Bank President Loretta Mester and Governor Michelle Bowman, both set to speak. All right, ahead of all that, let's get one more check of the futures and what's been kind of a rocky start to the week so far. Taking a look at futures, though, we're seeing them hit their highs of the morning. Right now, the Dow looks like it would open up about 160 points higher. The NASDAQ moving higher as well. For much more, let's bring in Patrick Armstrong, Chief Investment Officer at Plurimi Wealth. Patrick, you're right here with me in London. Great to have you here. So give me a sense. How do you see today shaping up? We're seeing a bit of a rebound in the markets. What is your WEX word of the day?
Premonitory is the word I chose, and it's basically a nervous anticipation about something bad that might happen. And I think what investors are waiting for right now is Israel's reaction. They said there's going to be a response to Iran. If that's relatively minor, I think that sets off a rally. If it's something of substance that's going to lead to another retaliation back from Iran, that's obviously going to be bad news. So I think there is a bit of nervousness around that.
All right, so a bit of nervousness. I have to say, I'm a bit surprised to see futures higher after Jay Powell's comments yesterday. Are you, and how do you see the markets moving before the next PCE report? I know we have some Fed speakers talking later today, but Jay Powell kind of said what he said.
Exactly,
it was a very clear message. Until we get this next PCE report, what do you see happening?
It's pretty clear, exactly. It's not an environment where they're going to be able to do the June cut. If you look at inflation break-evens, the two-year inflation break-evens up to 2.9%. The 10-year inflation break-even started the year at 2%, which the market was saying the Fed's right on target. It's up to 2.5% now. So we're at an environment where Fed credibility will be tested. If the Fed cuts into an environment with high inflation, very strong employment, wage growth outstripping inflation, I think they do risk losing credibility. So I think what Jay Powell said last night just makes perfect sense for where the economy is.
All right, so what he said makes sense, but how do the markets respond, at least until we get another inflation report that'll give us, you know, another fairly clear signal?
Yeah, there's a few more data points that are going to come out between now and June. A lot of geopolitical issues may crop up during that period as well, but the market wasn't surprised by Jay Powell. I think the market front-ran exactly what Jay Powell said because it just doesn't make sense, the June cut that everyone was expecting, given where inflation is right now.
All right, well, so right now we're seeing two sectors moving into correction territory, utilities and also real estate. In your mind, what is that signal? Because it feels like a couple of days ago, but it was really a couple of weeks ago, everybody was talking about this broadening of the market, and now we're seeing some contraction of the market, at least in those two areas.
Yeah. Two sectors I'm net short right now are real estate and utilities. They're interest rate sensitive. They're bond proxies. You've got inflation. You've got a Fed that can't be cutting. Interest rate sensitivity is not what you want on your equity exposure. You want companies that are participating in the growth, and real estate utilities don't do that.
All right. So again, your WEX word of the day is premonitory, SAT word on us, waiting for something bad to happen. So as we wait for something bad to happen, you seem to be a boxing fan. You gave us some notes using that old Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. You're saying the markets weren't surprised, but I do kind of think to hear Jay Powell come out so sternly saying no rate cuts anytime soon had to be a bit of a surprise, a bit of a jab in the mouth for some people. So what are you advising clients to do? What should you do now?
I think you've got to have a plan that you can stick to when you do get that punch in the mouth, because that's when it's difficult. And what I like with our strategies is we have flexibility. Everyone has a plan to buy something. I've got strategies where I can short things. So I talked about my short in real estate, short in utilities. I'm short Japanese bonds that cost me nothing to short. They yield 0.7%. Right. So inflation's creeping up in Japan. A weak yen's importing inflation. You want to have strategies that win from the bull market, but ways to basically protect yourself to give you the confidence to stay in that market when things do get a little bit tough. So that's the part.
So give
us
a couple sectors that you're advising clients to be in right now after this at least light jab on the chin.
The large cap tech are expensive companies, but they deserve the multiples they trade at. They've got either monopoly or quasi oligopoly positions where they have huge pricing power. They have people clamoring for their products. So Nvidia is a stock that's up massively year to date. But it's not that expensive. It's at 30 times earnings. That's fair for a dominant market position. I also love defense companies, energy companies. They give you an inbuilt geopolitical hedge against some pretty terrible events that might happen.
A lot of bullishness when it comes to energy right now. Patrick Armstrong, great to have you here in London. Thank you very much. Taking a look at futures, as we mentioned, pretty close to their highs of this morning. Looks like the Dow would open up about 150 points higher. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.